everybody. Welcome to episode 655 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode. We're going to be continuing the chronology by looking at Harbinger number 5, written by Joshua Dysart. We have pencils by Kari Evans with Matthew Clark and Jim Munez. Inks by Kari Evans with Matt Ryan and Sean Parsons. Colors by Ian Hannon with Jeremy Cox and Chris Sotomayor. Cover by Miko Suyan with Moose Bauman. So this is the final issue of the first volume of Harbinger. So Omega Rising conclusion. We saw at the end of last issue, or toward the end of last issue, Amanda McKee, Livewire, helped Pete Stanchek leave Harada Conglomerates. She believed that Harada was kind of overstepping his authority. She believe that Pete wasn't a force for good in their organization. But we learn a little more in this issue about kind of her deeper motivations as well. And we also saw at the end of last issue that Joe's best friend, the person in the world, maybe the only person in the world that he feels cares about him, maybe the only person in the world that truly does care about Pete, Joe Irons, was killed. And this supposedly happened through an overdose with a needle. And right away, as Pete is standing in the flop house looking down at Joe's body, he starts thinking, hey, things aren't making sense. As much as he's in mourning, as much as it's a traumatic event, he's a little bit in shock, he starts noticing little things, right? Like, Joe never would have used a needle. And why are all the other junkies in this flop house mind wiped? And so as Ingrid shows up there trying to get Pete to come back to Harada, Pete realizes, he puts it all together and realizes that this has to have been done by Harada and his associates. And Pete starts to rebel, right? The traumatic events are again awakening this tremendous amount of power that he has within him. So issue 5 starts out with a view of the bleeding monk as he sits there in lotus position, thinking to himself, and so it begins. The Omega rises. Meanwhile, in the abandoned tenement building in the inner city of Pittsburgh, Ingrid's trying to get Peter to calm down. And Pete says, what do you know, Ingrid? Tell me what you know or things are going to get ugly pretty fast. And all of a sudden, Chris is there and she's trying to talk Pete down. And Pete's like, wait, what are you doing here? And then immediately notices that she's wearing the same clothes that Pete saw her in the last time. Why would she be wearing the exact same outfit? Pete's like on high alert now. He's going to take everything that he sees with a grain of salt. He's going to question everything because, you know, he kind of let his guard down. He took a chance going with Harada. He made the decision, you know, I need help. And he feels betrayed. So now the pendulum has swung back completely the other way. He's trusting no one. And he immediately realizes that this Chris that he's seen must be a projection from Ingrid. Ingrid's in his mind. And Pete says, she's not real. You're projecting her. Stop it or I'll kill you. He's diving down into Ingrid's mind saying, I'm coming into your head. You will tell me the truth. And we see Ingrid there. Her nose starts to bleed. Her eyes are rolling back in her head. And she's saying, yes. Harada gave the order to kill Joe. Edward just left after killing him. Harada thought that if you found the body, you'd blame yourself for the death, that you couldn't protect the people that you care about. You'd come crawling back to us. You'd be more dedicated to helping us because we'd be the only people left in the world that you felt cared about you. You'd have nothing left but us. And it was the only reason that Joe was left alive, was in case Harada ever wanted to play this card. And again, just like I talked about in the last episode, huge mistake that's all ego and hubris from Harada. He should have known. Ingrid even talked about the fact that Pete was going to be an incredible challenge because you're trying to institutionalize someone who has grown up in institutions, doesn't trust them, has a complete resistance to them, and then you do this? You murder the one person that he cares about? Like, why would you ever possibly take that chance? You have so many resources at your disposal, Harada. What you really should have done was set up Joe in a place, get Joe help, try to get him to take his medication, and even if not, set him up in a compound where he is not a danger to himself or others, and you can show Pete that he's being taken care of. That would have been much better because even if this had worked, then you always have that secret, and it's like a time bomb just waiting to go off, right? If Pete ever finds out the truth, even if you fool him this time, if the truth ever comes out that you killed Joe Irons, Pete was going to rebel. This was going to happen. And so it makes no sense that Harada would make this mistrial. I mean, it makes sense in terms of his ego and his hubris. He believes he can do no wrong. He believes he's smarter than everybody else. But really a dumb mistake by Harada, in my opinion. So Pete is sad for a moment. He's distraught. He's Ingrid, I trusted you. I needed your help. I was trying so hard. And again, this is why it was such a bad choice. You finally got Pete to stop running. You finally got Pete to accept help. He was trying in his own way. Even if he was being smart alecky, even if he was resisting, at least he was there. At least you had him in your building. At least he was trying, and maybe if not to the level that you wanted him to, at least he was there making an effort. And in time, he may have increased his efforts. He may have tried harder. You may have brought him over to your side. You may have earned his trust more. But by doing this, you've erased any chance for that to happen. And Ingrid even recognizes that it's Harada's mistake. It's his hubris that has caused this. And she says, you know, Harada's, he's too powerful to understand how to appeal to you with an open heart, right? Harada's got so much power, and Harada's going to think that everybody's going to react the same way Harada would. Harada would never trust. Harada would never give in. Harada would always resist. Harada would feel the need to beat somebody down, beat them into submission. It's never going to be a partnership. It's never going to be reaching out with the open hand. It's always going to be deception because, again, Harada is going to project what he would do on others, right? He's going to assume that they're going to react the way he would react, with suspicion, and he's incapable of understanding kind of normal people, how normal people would react in these situations. He thinks he can manipulate them easily because he has such contempt for them and belief that they don't know as much as Harada is, right? He's going to be able to outsmart them. Ingrid also says, you can't really understand Harada because he's in consultation with the Bleeding Monk, and the Bleeding Monk is feeding him information about the future. Well, we know that's not 100% true either. I mean, the Bleeding Monk is feeding him information, but Harada isn't necessarily sharing the truth of that information to everyone else, not even his most trusted aides. Harada is shaping what the Bleeding Monk is telling him to suit his needs, right? So the Bleeding Monk tells Harada something, and Harada is going to hear it and interpret it in the way that best suits Harada's plans. So in a way, he's almost fooling himself. He's not even being honest with himself. And then he's going to turn around and twist the Bleeding Monk's words or take them out of context and only relay what he wants his other advisors and his followers to hear and to listen to, so that, again, the path of the future will take the path that Harada believes it needs to have. So Ingrid then says, everyone has to have faith in something, Peter, and I've chosen to believe in Harada. You know, we're scared that if we don't do something fast, we're all going to be screwed. And then Hidden Moon shows up, and, you know, he's always been on the side of, we just need to kill Pete. We're never going to be able to bring him to our side. We should just kill him. And he does give Pete one more chance. He's like, surrender, come back to the Foundation. Now you don't have any say in the matter. And Pete goes, oh, here we go, right? Here comes the stooge, so to speak, the man who holds the leash, going to neutralize me and drag me back to Harada, right? And what am I going to be when I go back there? A prisoner, doped up, powerless, just like I was in the hospital, right? You expected me to come back weeping over the loss of Joe in Ingrid's arms, right? And that didn't happen. So am I going to be muzzled like some kind of mad dog? And that's how you're going to bring me back? And Hidden Moon's like, mad dog? They don't lock up mad dogs, Pete. They put them down, which is exactly what I've always wanted to do with you. And when Pete challenges him, says, "Let's, all right, Sensei, let's see you put me down." Hidden Moon does extend his powers, his power dampening field, and Pete falls to the ground. And then Hidden Moon makes things physical. How's that leash feel now? Too tight? And he literally starts beating the crap out of Pete, saying, "You know, you don't deserve your powers. You're nothing but a product of your generation. Predictable. You want everything handed to you. But my power is negation, right? I can make you feel like an infant. I can make you feel powerless. All you've done is squander your powers. So how does it feel? How does it feel to be without your powers and be nothing special? And as he's fighting, Pete kind of lands close to Joe's body and he grabs the needle and he sticks it in Hidden Moon's neck. He kind of plays possum for a moment and then sticks in his neck saying, I hope there's still some poison left in that. I want my powers back. And you can tell that Hidden Moon is like affected by having this needle stuck in him, right? His reaction times are slowed. Pete's able to grab a pipe out of a broken wall and just whacks Hidden Moon right across the face with it saying, I only had one person in the world that gave a crap about me and you guys killed him. And all this time, Pete's screaming and he's whacking on Hidden Moon, you know, as good as any Joker beating Jason Todd Robin to death right here, I'm telling you. And Pete says, I want my powers back now. And as Hidden Moon is laying there, his jaw shattered, mouth gaping, you see his eyes still glowing. And Pete says, because I'm not done with you evil bastards by a long shot. And he gives Hidden Moon one more whack. And we see the light go out in Hidden Moon's eyes. And Pete has literally beaten him to death. Pete's powers are then fully unleashed. We see him fly up out of the abandoned tenement as the building crumbles around him, glass flying everywhere. We see Ingrid running down the street trying to escape the clouds of dust and debris. And as she runs, Pete sees her and tells her she's made a terrible mistake. And Ingrid tries to plead with him one last time, Peter, please don't do this, as he flies off. Meanwhile, back at Harada Global Conglomerates, the Pittsburgh headquarters, we see Stronghold kind of cozying up to Livewire. Apparently, they're a couple. He calls her baby and says the boss wants to see us. And meanwhile, Livewire's saying, did you do it? Did you take out that poor junkie? And Stronghold's like, well, of course I did. It was an order. Why would I even question it? And Amanda's talking about the girl that was brought in for the experiment, obviously referring to Faith, you're going to kill her too. And Eddie Stronghold saying, look, you know, we don't have to talk about this right now. You know, she's in a cell. We'll deal with her later. Let's go find out about our meeting, what Harada wants, and then we can go climb into bed together and forget this whole terrible night. So as they head into the room where Harada is waiting, Ion is there to greet them, bowing, saying Harada-sam is waiting. And immediately, I mean, these are Harada's three right-hand people, right? His three lieutenants, the ones that are in charge of the psyops, basically. And Harada trusts them, and so he wants to know, how did Peter walk out of the most secure building in the world? I'll buy that he could mind wipe every student, teacher, and guard. But why doesn't he trigger any alarms? Well, how about the hover cams? Livewire? I mean, she's the one that can talk to machines, right? So explain this to me. And she says, sir, any suggestion how he pulled that off? She says, no, sir. And he says, I refrain out of respect for you and for all of you from going inside your minds because your loyalty must be a choice. I hope you respect that. I mean, obviously he has his suspicions. And Eddie's even like, what's that about? And so Harada is expecting Pete to return, and he says as much, saying, upon his return tonight, our priority student will have suffered a traumatic loss, and tomorrow we start from scratch, and all of a sudden he hears, Harada! And it's Ingrid reaching out to warn him. He comes! My mind is scrambled, he comes! And Harada's, who come? Peter? And we see Peter come crashing through the window at that moment saying, whoa, did you see that? There was some kind of psionic shield to protect me. I thought I was a goner for sure. I'm learning something new every day, right, master? He says sarcastically to Harada. So Harada sends Livewire to get the students to safety. He doesn't want any of them engaging Peter. And also have the Visio Spatialist put the building on reality lockdown and secure Darpan. So I'm assuming reality lockdown means nobody outside the building is going to see anything that's going on. And as she receives these orders, Livewire is kind of taken aback. She's like, I've always been your right hand. I've always been right by your side, especially in battle. But obviously, on some level, Harada knows that she's betrayed him. And he even says, not tonight, Amanda, go. So the other two are there, Ion and Stronghold. They don't attack immediately.
Harada's trying to talk to Peter, saying, stop this, you know, we're not looking for a fight. You don't look like you're in any shape for a fight. Pete says, you know, your mind trick's not going to work on me. I'm way past talking. So we see Stronghold, see what his power is. He can draw energy from mass. It causes molecular decay, but it leaves appropriated energy free for sonic manipulation. So as he literally pulls energy from this giant skyscraper he's in, we do see that the skyscraper becomes damaged somewhat, but he fires a pretty powerful blast at Pete. Pete does not look like he's enjoying it. He's kind of curled up in a ball on the floor. And Stronghold says, see what you're up against? You need to take it easy. And Pete's like, you know, I remember you. You were in the van that first night. You were supposed to take care of Joe. So you must be Edward, right? Edward the killer. You're the one that killed him. That's what Ingrid said. And I don't know exactly how your powers work, but you totally just bone the structural integrity of the ceiling that you're standing under. And he pulls it down on top of him with a huge crash. And we get a scene, a shot of the outside of the Harada conglomerate headquarters here in Pittsburgh. And it's like half the roof of the kind of upper story has collapsed. And as Pete is trying to make his escape, we see Ion there saying, wait, are you going somewhere? You know, I've been waiting for this moment since the day I met you. You know, I might not have as many tricks as you, but I've had way more practice. And he literally starts to electrically stimulate all the neurons in Pete's brain, spiking up the voltage. He's like, Pete, how long do you think you can live with in a constant state of epileptic seizure? And Harada intervenes saying, okay, our opponent's down, Ion, release him. Harada still thinking he can get through to him, still thinking he can use Pete's power. Says, come with me, Peter. Grabs him, lifts him up by the throat, flies up above the building, saying, it's your last chance. You've hurt people close to me, and I'm still reaching out to you. Doesn't that show how much I care? But you need to understand, Peter, I'm the Omega. I'm the true Harbinger. You're just the Omicron. You're destined to serve or die. That's just how it's going to be. And Pete says, you know what you never understood about me, Harada? It's that I was born to die. And the reason Pete says that is because he sees turret drones approaching, and even Harada seems surprised by the turret drones. Pete thinks that Harada has summoned them, saying, you don't need machines to kill me, man. Just do it. Get it over with. And that's when Harada realizes that it's Amanda. It's Livewire that's done it. And she says, forgive me, master. And she fires with the turret drones at Harada as he drops Pete down to the wreckage of the building. And Pete's kind of laying there right on the edge of the building. And Amanda's telling him, you need to live, Stanchek. You're the only one who can challenge Harada, but you need to live. And then all of a sudden, Edward is there and he's just bursting with power. And Livewire's asking if he's okay. Edward Stronghold says, you know, I had to decay the rubble to keep from being crushed as it was falling on top of me. And it's too much energy. If I don't release it soon, I'm going to basically explode. And so he releases a huge burst of energy. And when that energy kind of hits the rubble, it shakes it loose. And as I said, Pete was right on the edge. So he falls, saying, sayonara, bitches. And as he's falling, he's thinking, he's trying to send out a message to Harada saying, I don't know if you can hear me. I'm so tired, so weak, but I just want to say goodbye. Thank you for proving the world isn't worth an ounce of passion as long as men like you run things. And as he's falling, all of a sudden, Faith is there to catch him. So apparently his attempt to activate her actually worked. And she's thinking, or she's telling him actually, you know, a little super strength wouldn't have hurt. You could have given me that too. And meanwhile, back up on the building, Edward has finished releasing the last of his power. And he's even upset that Livewire has betrayed them, saying, what have you done, Amanda? As Harada lands on the building, having taken care of the turret drones, Livewire's kneeling in front of him saying, I'm sorry, you're great, but you have so much power, there must be another to balance. I'll accept your condemnation or punishment, whatever you have for me. And Harada says, you've achieved nothing but destroying my trust in you. Pete's trying to block me like he did when he escaped the building, but he's weak, he's in and out of consciousness. As soon as he goes to sleep, I'll find him. And we see Faith trying to carry Pete as far as she can, but he's just too heavy. So they land, kind of a rough landing in a park. And Pete's in terrible shape, saying, "Faith, you can fly?" She's like, "Heck yeah, it worked. You made me a real superhero. I totally saved your life from those jerks. I'm going to be the greatest superhero ever. Joss Whedon's going to make a movie about me." And Pete's like, "Faith, you got to have faith in something, I guess, and I'm going to be sick." And he vomits there as Faith is reveling in her ability to fly. Meanwhile, we see the chamber that previously had held the bleeding monk is empty. We see his bloody footsteps. He has walked out of the building, I guess taking advantage of the distraction of the huge battle that's been raging. And we see him walking along a bridge, heading where, we're not sure, but we see the Harada building in the background, and we can see a little bit of the damage. So that brings to an end Omega Rising, the first part of the first volume, I should say, of Harbingers. And next we have the return of Chris in Renegades Part 1. So again, I think this first volume of Harbinger is so well paced, so well done. It's not a story where everything is tied up in a nice, neat bow. It's messy, you know, kind of like life. Pete, you know, the argument could be made, is our main protagonist, our hero, and he's a messy guy too. He, you know, at the end of this first volume, he's hurt. He's got no one, with maybe the exception of Faith, to really like lean on or help him. His best friend Joe's dead. He doesn't really completely understand how to use his powers. He's kind of alienated the people in his life who maybe could have helped him. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, Harada's not looking too good now, right? You remember in some previous episodes of the chronology, I talked about if you had no prior knowledge of Harbinger, the story, the title, the universe, didn't know anything about Harada, and you just based it on the way he was acting and the things he was saying in the first few issues, maybe you could have been fooled into believing that he was really an altruistic guy, you know, a good guy. I don't know if that's the case. I would be interested to hear from any listeners who did pick up Harbinger in 2012 when it first came out, having no prior knowledge, not knowing that Harada was the bad guy. What was your take on that? Did you think, "Oh yeah, this guy's got the best interests of the world at heart. He's a Professor X type." I mean, did anybody actually think that? Or was the way he held himself, the way he kind of talked and ordered people around, was that an immediate warning sign that you knew he couldn't be trusted? I mean, obviously his true colors have come out now. He killed Joe Irons. He killed Pete's best friend, in the hopes of somehow that was going to send Pete running back into the arms of Harada and the Harbinger Foundation. I mean, even saying it out loud, it seems really far-fetched, but to Ingrid's point that she made in this issue, Harada has so much power, he has a hard time relating to people. And you almost think, how could he have become so successful? How could he have achieved everything he's achieved when he's apparently so bad at reading people? Or maybe it's just Pete that he's bad at reading, right? Because Pete doesn't exactly think like a normal person. He was born activated. He's had these powers ever since he can remember, and he hasn't had an easy road of it. So maybe it's the fact that Harada is capable of predicting behavior of a quote-unquote normal person, right? Somebody who's walking around without those kind of powers, and they make, you know, a little bit more rational decisions. I certainly wouldn't say that a lot of the decisions Pete makes are rational or are thought out. Some of them he regrets almost instantly. I would think his choice to do what he did to Chris would be a perfect example of that. He was trying to talk to Chris. She was a link to some of the few happy memories that he had of his childhood, and he sees her there outside of school. He's trying to make a connection. she's creeped out by him and, you know, starts to walk away saying, you know, leave me the hell alone. And he just impulsively just, you know, makes a snap decision. Hey, fall in love with me. You know, that's Stanchek. I don't know that he's somebody that you can really predict. He is somewhat unstable, and that makes him unpredictable. And you would think that Harada, especially because apparently he was observing him for quite a while, at least he claimed to have been, you think that he would have been a little more wary. Because again, like I said earlier, even if Pete hadn't found out about Stronghold killing Joe in this issue, and they still had killed Joe, and it worked the way that Harada thought it would, right? And it sent Pete running back to the arms of the Harbinger Foundation. It's still a ticking time bomb. It's still a secret that, when exposed, would always end up with Pete turning against Harada and the Harbinger Foundation. So, to me, a risk too big to take when you're talking about the second most powerful Psyot in the Harbinger universe. At least that's Harada's take. There's still a possibility that Pete is even more powerful than Harada. I don't know that that's ever been established. So something to ask Josh Dysart about next time I see him, I guess. Knowing Josh, we'll end up having a long conversation and there will be no answer. But that's one of the best things about talking to Josh. So thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.